You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting marketing or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CFP, CPA, and AEP. For folks who don't know what that means, that's an accredited estate planner. On the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online at wdiy.org. And you might wonder why I'm mentioning that when you could be listening on your radio, and that's for those folks who are outside of our listening area. Sometimes you might work here and be driving some distance. So if you're ever outside the listening area, you can always stream online with wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is May 21st. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 16,533, the NASDAQ at 4131, and the S&P at 1888. Last week, I talked about estate planning for every stage of your financial life. And this week, oh, and I wanted to mention we had Judy Harris from Norris McLaughlin and Marcus, and I really appreciate Judy coming in and helping out with the show. She's been on several times, and she does a great job talking about estate planning, so I want to thank her for coming in the night before she went on vacation, so that was very nice. So we are talking about investment planning for every stage of your financial life tonight. I also want to mention that this is part of a whole series on planning for every stage that I have been doing, not always in order and not always every single week. I've had to kind of insert some other topics here and there. So that is something that you can watch for on WDIY's website or Your Financial Choices website. You can look for podcast of prior shows. And basically what we're trying to do is bring in the elements of financial planning. So I'll give you more information on that as well. We are live. Judy Ann will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and we'll do the best to answer them. The number to call in is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can also email questions through the website yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can do that at any time. It doesn't have to be just during the show. So questions, ideas for topics for the shows, we welcome that information. I do have with me in the studio this evening another financial advisor, Timothy Roof, who is a certified financial planner practitioner. He's a financial advisor who also heads the investment committee at Valley National Financial Advisors. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Good evening, Lori.
Thanks for being here. It's Tim's second appearance on the show. In the past, Tim came on and discussed college planning because that was a topic near and dear to his heart at the time. So, Tim, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'd like to first say good evening to the listeners, and thank you for having me on the show tonight, Lori. I am a certified financial planner, and I have 11 years of financial services experience with Valley National Financial Advisors. I've been helping clients meet their financial goals, and I currently reside in the Poconos with my wife and two children.
Great, great. So this is going to be good because you have, when we're talking about different stages that people go through, we're going to have you're going to be able to talk from experience on some of these stages. So we're going to kick off our discussion with those very same folks who benefit from college planning, those people at the testing stage. And much as I did last week, I want to set the stage for our discussion. So I'm going to remind listeners, as I did last week, what the elements of financial planning are. And I really think, listeners, if you start thinking about these categories, it's going to help formulate decisions you need to make and be more aware of the decisions that you're making in your financial life. So when we talk about the elements of financial planning, we're talking about cash flow, investments, risk management, tax planning, retirement planning, and estate planning. And from the elements of financial planning, we recognize that they may apply at any stage of your financial life, and the stages as I describe them. And I think someone asked me, maybe it was you, Tim, I don't remember who asked me who made this up and where did I get this, and I just made it up so that it would be kind of easy to remember, because that's how I am. I have to have things that I can remember.
Well, it should be fun.
We'll see. So the stages: testing, nesting, investing, resting, divesting, and we'll give a brief synopsis as we go through this. So we're going to talk about investment planning in particular. Tim, you know, does a great job with this, talking about investments in a very easily understandable way. But we're also going to kind of talk about just some tips and concepts. Nothing, you know, so specific, but more the ideals that you have to concentrate on each of these stages. So the testing stage: younger, lower salaries, low tax brackets, may have a new job that offers a retirement account or life insurance, could be still people in college. So this testing stage, Tim, this is young adults basically going into their first job. They might have some employee benefits at work. They might have student loans. So from an investment standpoint, can you kind of set the stage for some of the things that they should be paying attention to at this time of their life?
Well, first I would start off with taking an inventory of your current liabilities and what they are costing you versus what you can make while investing. For instance, one of the first things I did when I got out of college and started to receive a regular income was I looked at consolidating my student loans. Throughout the consolidation process, I was able to have a payment that fit my income, and then also I was able to actually reduce my interest rate, which cost me less over the term, which was very helpful.
So when you think about doing the consolidation of loans, was that offered through the place where you had some of the student loans, or did you do it through a bank? Do you remember even?
Yes, it was offered through the institution that held my Stafford and non-Stafford loans at the time. They had some options as far as consolidation, as well as actually automatic payment options, where if you selected one of the automatic or automatic bill pay options, it would automatically reduce your rate as well.
Okay, so that's something to think about, especially for the young people who are graduating just recently from our local areas. Parents, if you're listening, you have recent grads who are going to have student loans. Those kick in fairly soon after graduation. So some of those loans will be deferred during the college years. But then if the kids end up not going back to school, like for grad work, then the loans start up. So Tim, do you remember also, did you do it right away, or did you have that opportunity further along after you first started paying? I'm asking you to go back a little bit, but
I didn't do it right away until I got on my feet in the working world, so to speak. And then at that point, I really started to focus on what the liabilities were and what my income was, and started to put together a budget and a cash flow that was sustainable.
Okay, so then you make a good point. Now you said you're in the working world, we're getting some pay, and you also said to look at what the liabilities are costing you and then maybe what you could do in investments. So when you get your first job, you might have an opportunity to participate in a retirement account at work. So here you are, fresh out of college, you have these loans, you can put money in your 401k. How does someone kind of go through that mental exercise of deciding what to do?
Well, first off, I would start and try to find out, do you receive an employer match? How soon can I start the plan? You may want to ask these questions. Human resources should be able to help you with answering some of these questions. And you want to take advantage of the plan as soon as possible. If there's an employer match, take advantage of that. Consider it a bonus to your current pay that you receive already.
I might mention that something that people need to pay attention to as well, young people, when they're trying to make these decisions, is sometimes you get an employer match if you put something in, but there are some plans out there that are also called safe harbor plans that may not require you to have to put money in. So back to Tim's point about knowing and understanding what loans will cost you and then how you could benefit from investing, you might get a benefit from the employer putting money in even if you don't.
And that brings up a good point. When I started with my employer plan, I actually signed up, received the safe harbor match, and started contributing to a Roth right away because I realized I was in a lower tax bracket. I was going to be able to take advantage of contributing to a Roth now, and I wasn't really getting the tax money back via pre-tax contributions right away into the 401k. So it did make some sense to do the Roth, and it also helped me save for some other instances as well, because the Roth has some flexibility as far as how, when and how you can tap those monies.
I want to talk about that when we come back from our break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit WDIY.org.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me this evening Tim Roof, a certified financial planner practitioner. We're discussing investing at every stage of your financial life. We just kind of went through talking about, you know, those initial years when you're, you know, young and a new job, and talking about taking an inventory of your liabilities, your student loans. Maybe you have to have a new car to get yourself to work. So understanding what those liabilities are costing you, but then also what can you do about saving and saving for retirement. So right before break, let me give the phone number one more time, and then we're going to talk about Roth IRAs a little bit more. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and let me mention, we are live. You can call in and ask questions live on air or off air. And Judy Ann is here to answer your calls, and she can write down your question and bring it into the studio. So if you're a little shy, last week we had four calls and they were all off air. So, you know, we're happy to take questions live or off air, whatever you're most comfortable with. The number is 610-758-8810. So Tim had just mentioned that when he first started working, he had student loans. He got some loan consolidation, lowered his rate through various ways. It was great. And was working for an employer that offered, that had a safe harbor match or a safe harbor contribution, meaning the employer automatically puts money in no matter if the employee does or not. So then Tim had like an aha moment and said, well, then maybe I could save in a Roth IRA. Can we talk? And one of the reasons was, when you're first starting work, folks, that's probably going to be some of your lowest earning years and the time of your life when you're going to be in the lowest tax brackets. Think about it. You're just starting off. You're, you know, getting your career set up. And, you know, by the time people are between 45 and 55, that's when we really see the big increases in income, typically. So you're just out of college. Great way to save. Tim, talk about the Roth just a little bit more for me, if you can.
Well, what's great is you can make a good chunk of money and still be able to contribute to the plan. For instance, the single, if you file single on your tax return, you could make up to $114,000 before your phase out occurs. Married filing joint, you can make up to $181,000 before your phase out occurs. So knowing that you have that ability to contribute to your Roth and still make a decent amount of money is nice to know. Also, the flexibilities which you may have is not only can you use the Roth to save for your retirement, you could also use the Roth to possibly create an emergency reserve. The Roth has some unique features where you can get to the contributions within the Roth without income tax or penalty. So that was very helpful for me when I started working, started contributing to the Roth, because I was able to contribute to the employee plan that we had, as well as contribute to the Roth and still have that peace of mind that I could get back to my those monies if I needed it for a down payment on a home or a car purchase, whatever those types of expenses that may be coming up.
So you could almost go into it with a little bit more confidence, feeling like if you had to get it, you could. But can you tell me, did it feel empowering when you saw it building up?
Oh, absolutely.
All of a sudden, it encourages you to do more of it, probably.
That's a great feeling. It was better than putting it in a savings account and earning, you know, a minor of amount of interest, or putting it under the mattress or in a shoebox in your room, and then or leaving it in your checking account, because then you might actually end up spending that money,
right,
instead
that's
of
what
saving
I see.
It.
Because that's economics. You know, people typically spend what they make. So is this a good time for young people to start paying attention when we talk about investments, where, you know, people say, what is a prospectus? Do I need to read this prospectus? Do I need to do research? You know, how much can someone really do? And do you have any ideas on how they learn about investing?
Yeah, when you sign up with your plan, you're normally going to get an enrollment package from your employer and a summary plan document. Within those packages, you'll be able to get information on the investment options that are within the plan. You'll be able to learn about what their investment goals are, the performance, prior returns. You can also, even most employers have a participant website where you can log in, research the plan's investment options, get some additional information about the fund managers and their history and so forth to help you make informative decisions for yourself.
That's great. So the idea, folks, and one of the reasons I'm doing this series is I'm all about like building up to this. Some of us, it's too late. We missed it. So if we can start encouraging some of this engagement at a young age, or parents, you know, so often we try to help our kids and tell them, you know, shoulda, woulda, and, you know, this is what you should do. And it's sometimes hard to engage them in that. Well, you know what? You can tell them, hey, why don't you listen to these podcasts, listen to these prior shows, and maybe it will be a little bit of an incentive, motivation to set themselves up for their future. Because like the movies Back to the Future, when we look in the future, all of a sudden we say, gosh, we wish we would have started saving when we were, you know, 22 and in our, you know, first started our job. Because a lot of times we think we don't have any money then. But when we really don't have any money is when we move into the nesting stage, which is the next stage. So save while you can, and your money can work for itself. So the nesting stage we're talking about is, you know, we're kind of, you know, out of college for a while. Maybe we're getting those loans under control. And but we meet someone. We want to have a relationship. Maybe we want to buy a house. We want to settle down. We buy cars. Next thing we know, we have children, possibly. Not everybody has children, but we still might be in that phase where we have obligations, where we're not as mobile. We're going to kind of hunker down, have a job, stay where we are, and be tied down a little bit more. So, Tim, now we're at the nesting stage, and let's talk about where people feel like they don't have money, but maybe they're working. What can people do as far as some investment strategies at this point, when it feels like everything's going toward car payments, house payments, and, you know, just general living expenses? What can we help folks do to get their arms around some investing strategies for this stage?
Well, I would say if you feel overwhelmed with investing and asset allocation, a lot of employer plans now have the target date funds that are available. So they'll set you up based off of your time horizon, or they might have predefined asset allocations that you could enroll in. So if you do feel overwhelmed and you don't feel informed enough to make those decisions for yourself, those are really, really good place for you to start and get things going and still give you a peace of mind.
And then at this time too, Tim, we have, I guess people could be smarter. One thing I've mentioned in the past is being a little bit smarter too about how you're spending your money. You talked about investments, and especially when we have employer plans, retirement accounts, and things like that. But what also goes to investing, as you mentioned, with the testing stage, taking an inventory of your liabilities, that applies at this stage as well.
Oh, absolutely. It applies almost throughout your life. Right now, I'm in the nesting phase stage. So I'm going through a lot of this. You're kind of juggling family, work, living expenses, those liabilities that you need. But what you really need to do is focus on and make sure that you're building saving into your budget and your cash flow. That's important. Treat that like a necessity, a necessary expense. Don't treat that like a discretionary expense.
Okay, and then we're ready for our next break. And then when we come back, Tim, I want to talk about what happens when the kids come around and how do our investment strategies possibly change when we have children in the picture. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
Thank you, and welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening Timothy Roof, CFP, and we're talking about investment strategies for every stage of your life. And we have a caller on line one. Hello, this is Lori. May I help you?
Hi, Lori. I have a question for you and Tim.
Okay.
It's pertaining to the safe harbor and the 401k plan offered by employers. I'm eligible coming up in July, and I'm starting to think about what kind of strategies or what kind of investment plan I'm going to undertake. And I'm curious, what strategies would you recommend with the 401k plan? And I'm a little concerned about the dollar amounts that I'll be investing. Probably only be, you know, a couple $100 here and there as much as I can. And I want to be diversified enough to protect my money as well as grow it. And I was wondering, is it a good idea to invest in several funds with the small dollar denominations, or is it smarter to invest in one fund and keep buying additional funds every month? So
that's a great
if you can
question.
Just give me an idea of what kind of strategy.
That's a great question, Doug. Tim, do you want to jump on there?
Yeah, thanks, Doug, for the question.
Doug, are you still on, or did he fall off the air? Okay. Go ahead, Tim.
Great. Well, again, going back to the target date funds or predefined asset allocation, your plan may have that target date fund. You could always start there. When you're starting out, that's a really good way to get diversification across both equities and fixed income. So that'll be able to set you up and give you that growth that you're going to need in order to obtain your future retirement goals. But if you wanted to take it a step further and maybe develop a investment plan of your own within the 401k, you would want to start taking a look at the investments within the plan, get to understand their performance, how they have performed in the past, and understand that you have, it sounds like, a long time until retirement. You could have 30, 40 years until retirement. So you can take on some additional risks now, earn a quite possibly a higher return now, which will help you obtain your goals in the future.
Doug, are you still on? Because you know what? I was wondering, I don't know if you heard Tim earlier, because we just talked about a safe harbor plan is one where the employer automatically puts money in for you and you don't have to put any money in. You could, as the employee piece, you could. But did you hear Tim talking about a Roth IRA?
Yeah, I did. I heard him talk about using a Roth as a supplemental piece of savings.
Okay, so Tim, that might be something that Doug could look at as well.
Absolutely. I would definitely suggest looking into it. Consider the fact that that's after-tax money going in, but it's tax-exempt money moving forward. So your return is going to be your after-tax return. So that's the best thing about it. When you're investing in a 401k, that's normally pre-tax contributions that's going into your 401k, but that will be taxed at retirement. But additionally, you also may want to look at your employer plan now. You may have the Roth option within your 401k at work. So that could also be an option to you. Again, though, you might want to stick with the self-directed Roth because you have more control over it. The Roth, you'll have to meet an exception to get to it, or a hardship withdrawal
if it's in the 401k,
right? Or quite possibly have to take a loan, and so that's why the self-directed Roth through a brokerage account might be the best way to handle saving in or for the Roth purposes.
Okay. Doug, did you get all that?
Yeah, I got all that. Thank you very much.
Okay, good question. Thank you
really
for calling. Thank you for calling.
Have a good evening.
He brought up some good points, though, Tim, which I thought, you know, not to talk over our caller, but which was if it's a small amount starting off. So here you have someone who's young, their salary, you know, it's a new salary, new employee, and they may not have that much to put in. And you had mentioned using the target date funds, and then probably, so that's to get that diversification. So in our example, let's say you have an employee who can put, or maybe even in a Roth IRA or a regular IRA, someone who has $1,000 and they want to start, and that's all they can start with. So target date funds could help give the diversification. But there may be a point where, is it too small to do anything? You know, I mean, do people have to worry about that? I mean, because I would like to encourage anyone to be able to start, if you can do something, to go ahead and start, because it is empowering, like we were talking about with your Roth IRA. But a lot of people will think, oh, I can only put in $1,000. That's not enough. What would your comment to that be? I mean, there are sometimes costs to have IRAs or Roth IRAs, but what do you think? How small can someone start with?
It doesn't matter. Anything is something. So anything you could do is always going to help you in the future. And if you don't want to look towards the target dates funds, you could use a growth-oriented funds that gives you broad market exposure, which would give you diversification in that sense as well. And then look to later as you accumulate, then start to diversify and and allocate those monies in a different fashion. And also your time horizon has changed, so you want to take that into consideration as well.
I want to bring up a point that you had made about the Roth 401k. So there may be employers out there who offer a 401k plan, and folks, your employer may have added an extra feature called the Roth 401k feature. Some employers haven't added it. A lot of employers have. It might be something you want to look at. And what that is it's up to the 401k amounts that folks can contribute, but as the regular 401k gives you pre-tax contributions, the Roth 401k goes in after tax. But as Tim mentioned, you can't get to it. But the attraction of that is for a lot of people who haven't saved so much in their regular retirement accounts, that will all come out as ordinary income. So to the extent that sometimes you can save a little bit money in these Roth type accounts, they will come out tax-free if you do everything the right way, have a qualified distribution. So just a little alert, if you're someone who has a 401k at work and you like the idea of a Roth, but maybe you your income is too high and you're not allowed to do the regular Roth, you can always use that Roth 401k option if you want to get some after-tax monies. But I also liked your bit about the Doug, for example, doing just a regular Roth.
And if you're worried you can't be systematized enough where you can ensure that you're making those monthly contributions like you would into your employer's plan, you could set up electronic funds transfer or an automated contribution to your Roth IRA or traditional IRA with your brokerage firm as well. That would automatically draw from your bank account on a specific day that you wish for those monies to come out. So it's a built-in necessary living expense then within your cash flow budget.
And we're going to talk how powerful that systematic contributions are when we come back from our next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. WDIY thanks its members and Valley.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And welcome back. Thanks, Jeff. The phone number this evening, folks, 610-758-8810. If you're just tuning in, I'm giving you a phone number for what? Well, for your financial choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me this evening Tim Roof. He's a certified financial planner, and we are discussing investment strategies for every stage of your financial life. We've gone through the testing stage, the nesting stage. And if you have questions, you can call in live on air or off air. You can give your question to Judy Ann. She'll bring it in if you're too shy to talk on air. Otherwise, we're happy with live calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I just want to wrap up one of the things Tim had just kind of said at the end there when we're talking about the nesting stage and setting up systematic contributions into retirement accounts. That is so powerful, I can't tell you. I was just mentioning to Tim on the way over here tonight that, you know, as we're going to get into the investing stage momentarily, that one day you wake up and you have money and you don't realize why you have it. Well, it was partly because of this systematic contributions. You just, you know, if you don't see it, you don't spend it. And it's just a really, really good habit to get into. And if you can put, let's say, 10% into retirement accounts, it will really help you save. But I also want to reiterate what Tim had said at the beginning a couple times, is that you also want to make sure you know how much your liabilities are costing you and weigh that with your investment options. So, Tim, in the nesting stage, we talked about this is a very long stage. It could be from, you know, 25 years till 55 years. It's a long stage. A lot of things are happening during that time. So we also talked about some of the roadblocks for saving, but how do people do this, and what kind of needs do you see?
Well, getting it, applying it is, again, going back to just making sure you systematize those contributions. You made a great point. You almost forget that you're actually making those contributions, and before you know it, you have a sizable retirement savings built up for yourself. Which is nice and is always going to give you that peace of mind at night. I wanted to bring up one important point that I saw in my readings. Fidelity did a study, and just for benchmarking purposes for you out there, for those of you out there that would like to, you know, benchmark where you're at versus where Fidelity believes you should be with your retirement savings. Their study showed that at 35 years old, you should have saved for retirement one times your salary, At 45, you should have three times your salary, and at 55, five times your salary. So that'll give you some benchmarks for you to shoot for in the future to help you choose not only your asset allocation, but how much you should be contributing now to your retirement. And rule of thumb had been, has always been, normally about 10%, start with 10%. But, you know, recent studies that I've read has actually shown you might want to start contributing more than 10% to your retirement plans due to the fact that costs are rising, costs are being laid in our laps that on the medical side that haven't been there in the past. So you know, those costs in retirement may go up for us and the younger generation.
So we can build up to maybe 10% if we're not doing that now. And then a good way to increase it, as you suggested, might be through raises. That's a kind of a painless way to do it, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's say you put in 10%, the employer matches 3 or 6, you're getting a total of 13 or 16 to your retirement account. And what you don't even realize is that your salary is probably going up on an annual basis. And as long as you're putting a percentage into your account, your contributions are going up because your salary is going up.
Okay, so in that, we can kind of factor in our employer match or our employer safe harbor amount if we want, when we're talking about maybe doing more than 10%. So if our employer's putting in 3 and I'm putting in 10, that's pretty good.
Yes, you can.
Okay, that's good. We had a caller call in off air. We had Mitch from Bethlehem. He said he's 22. He just finished college. He saved through high school and college working. Wow, that's great, Mitch. I hope you're listening to us. Congratulations on that. Fortunate to have some dollars and a job. What are the best investment options for this stage? So he's young. He's 22. We'd probably have to put a little disclaimer that, Mitch, it always depends, and we'd have to ask you lots of questions. But can you hit on some of those questions we would ask them and then give an example of what it would look like maybe for someone who's 22 with a long time horizon?
Yes. Some of the places I would start is, what are your immediate and intermediate goals as far as do you want to buy a home? Do you want to start renting? Do you need to save for that security deposit when you do start renting? Do you, for instance, need to pay off some of those college loans or fit that into your budget as well? So you want to start there, make sure that you have an emergency reserve, that you're able to use that when you need a down payment for a home in the future, or you need a down payment for a car because you, you know, if you were anything like me, you had basically the same car through high school and college, and it was breaking down, and you needed to step up that car, so you weren't in the shop every week because you needed to get to work.
So that's good. That's good advice. So because sometimes, in fact, at the end of every show, I always say be proactive, not reactive. So this is also fits into that theme, which is being proactive, because someone, 22, who might think, I've got money, I can invest, I've got a long time frame, they might think, oh, I'll go more aggressive with my investments. But you just raised a bunch of very important points about your short-term and intermediate goals, because if someone's going to want that money, we talked about moving into the nesting stage, possibly 25 to 30, that's not really as long of a time horizon.
And when we talk emergency reserve, you know, you're talking over the next 1 to 3 years, quite possibly you might, you know, use those monies. So you're going to want to keep that liquid. You don't want to take risk with that. You don't want it growth oriented and economic shock occurs and you lose some of those monies and now you're not able to you don't have that down payment for your home now, and you have to push that off longer than you wish to do so. So that's why it's important to have that emergency reserve, keep that emergency reserve liquid, and also then you can start putting those monies away for retirement into your employer plans, and then think about the Roth, the traditional IRAs, some of those options we've talked about, you know, over the last several minutes.
That's great. Thank you, Mitch, for calling in. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. I want to just reiterate some guidelines, not guidelines, what a Fidelity study had shown. I thought that that was interesting, so I want to mention it just one more time, Tim. Tim had pointed out that according to this study, they suggested that at age 35 that you have saved one time your salary. At age 45, three times your salary. Sorry, I'm starting to laugh because I'm not sure I'm there. And at 55, five times your salary. Luckily, I'm not 55 yet, so I have some time. So I'll have to up those contributions, I guess. But again, talking about painless ways to do it, automatic, systematic, from a Grease movie, automatic, systematic, get those contributions in those retirement accounts makes it a little less painful, and love the idea of using a Roth as an emergency reserve as well. Mitch, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It was great, and I love that young people are thinking about these things and being smart about saving. You'll be way ahead of the game of your peers if you do so. Before we move to the investing stage, Tim, I want to mention one more thing about the nesting stage, which is let's talk for a moment about college savings, because this is the time where we have children, and then there's some debate about, do I save for my retirement or do I save for my children's college education? But what I would also like to add, if we are going to save for our children's college education, what are some smarter ways to maybe do that?
Well, the options you have before you are 529 plans, Coverdell education savings accounts, as well as an UGMA account or a uniform gift to minors account. The 529 is a great way to save. You could use those money for qualified education expenses, post-secondary education expenses. That includes the tuition, room and board, supplies, and books. And you can also take for Pennsylvania purposes, take that as a deduction from your Pennsylvania income. The educational savings accounts for the Coverdell, there are lower contribution amounts that you can put into these plans, but you could use that for both secondary and post-secondary education.
Like high school.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. And then the UGMA accounts is basically a gift where you end up being the custodian until the age of majority, which is 21 in Pennsylvania. And at that point, it becomes the beneficiaries' monies, and they can do with it as they wish. Until they become 21, those monies will be taxed to them. But one thing you have to be aware of is there could quite possibly be a kiddie tax, which starts at a $2,000 threshold of income from those UGMA accounts.
And the kiddie tax is where it could be taxed at the parents' rates, so that may or may not apply. So parents can't be as clever as they used to by shifting their income to the kids. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're talking about some basic investment strategies. We're not covering everything. We're just trying to throw out some ideas and stimulate your brain thinking about some financial strategies for you to employ. I like people to be aware of options. That's why we're here doing the show, education, and it's my fulfilling my teacher duties here. So Tim, let's talk about the investment stage. So why I call this the investing stage is it's that aha moment where I think, oh my gosh, I have money that I didn't realize I had, because all those years I was saving and spending on my children, or you know, spending paying for the house or the cars, all of a sudden one day I wake up, I have money. So I'm not maybe as burdened about the liabilities that I might have. I might have taken care of those. What in general, and again, this could apply to all of the stages, in general, what is the most important thing that people can really do when they're looking at their investments? So many people think it's about what they're picking, you know, getting that next next investment that they're chasing to get returns. If we pull back from that, what are some of the investment strategies that someone could use that actually will have more of an impact?
A simple thing you could do is start with rebalancing and there. Being disciplined with rebalancing. I would suggest to rebalance at least annually your account. Effectively, what you're accomplishing is you're selling assets that have performed really well over the past year and purchasing assets that haven't performed as well. And as you know, and markets move in cycles. So what you can do and look back to 2013, the equity markets performed very well. Bonds did not perform as well. And now we shifted gears coming into 2014. Had you rebalanced at the end of 2013, you sold off some of those equities. You bought some more fixed income in your portfolios. And now, so far this year, fixed income has performed well while the stock market has gone kind of sideways for the time being.
So you're talking about asset allocation and rebalancing. And regular rebalance. How often did you say how often should people look at rebalancing?
I would suggest at least once annually.
Once annually. Okay. And that also goes to your point earlier where you said sometimes folks can get online access to their retirement accounts. Because don't you see quite often that while we love this systematic contribution to our retirement accounts and we kind of forget about it, people shouldn't forget about their retirement accounts.
Yeah, and your employee plan, remember, or you could even research this, sometimes you could actually set that up online to rebalance regularly. You could set that up to rebalance monthly, rebalance quarterly, and it's automated. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to make sure you set aside a day to do this. The custodian offers this and will do it for you based off of your instructions.
That's great. Didn't realize that. Folks, we are going to take our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810 or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. The time now is 6:46 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. One other thing that happens in the investing stage, as I mentioned, all of a sudden you wake up one day and you realize you have money, and you might more specifically notice you have money when you have your tax return and you're reporting interest income and you realized, wow, I have, you know, all this interest income on not a very high interest rate, which means maybe I have a lot of money in the bank. Or you might have dividends, and all of a sudden you might start becoming more aware of how your investments are getting taxed. So, Tim, can we talk for a minute about the geography of where our investments are and the taxation on it? And so part of the investment strategy is being aware of after-tax costs, I would say. So let's talk about the tax impact on some of the different types of accounts that we have.
Yeah, we all want to keep the money in our pockets and less to Uncle Sam. So that's very important. And we all want to increase our after-tax returns. So investing tax efficiently is going to be very important in this stage of the game. You want to consider in your tax-deferred accounts, such as your IRAs, your 401k, your 403b. You know, that's where you may want to look to put some of your bonds or fixed income that's earning the yield, that's earning that income. Because if you would have put that in your taxable account, you'd be being taxed at your ordinary income rates. In the taxable accounts, you want to start thinking about investing in keeping the growth stocks there. You want to look for the capital appreciation there because you're getting the preferential tax treatment on long-term capital gains and long-term capital gain distributions that your mutual funds may be distributing to you. And then with the Roths, you have your tax-exempt accounts. You could do a mix of each. You could have some growth potential in there as well as your safety of principal and income within your Roths and your tax-exempt accounts.
So I do think that people do start to all of a sudden pay attention more. We really are encouraging folks to pay attention much earlier. Get your kids involved earlier, get them saving earlier so that they have more impact. It's about compounding. But at this investment stage, I do feel like all of a sudden people start paying more attention to asset allocation, rebalancing, and then the tax consequences. So once they get through that stage, hopefully they've invested well throughout their life, and now it's time for retirement. And that how their accounts are getting taxed really becomes apparent then, because folks, if you've retired and you don't have a pension, and maybe you're not even eligible for Social Security yet, if all of your money is coming out of retirement accounts, as Tim mentioned, that's all ordinary income. So there may be some planning things that you could do before you collect Social Security, or maybe before you're having to take required minimum distributions out. But the other thing we go ahead, Tim. Tim wants to add something.
Well, let's say you retire early and you're not receiving your Social Security yet. You may have the opportunity to convert your IRAs into Roth IRAs.
Can we talk about what that means and what that looks like?
Yeah, sure. Basically, what you're doing is taking your IRA, converting it to a Roth, and paying ordinary income tax on it in the year that you make the conversion. But you would want to do that when your income tax bracket is lower than what it was in your earnings years or what you figure to be in your distribution years as well from your IRA accounts.
And can people convert any amount? Or do you have to convert a whole account?
You now can convert any amount.
Right, so you don't have to, but sometimes I think people think if their IRA is, you know, $50,000, they think they have to convert the whole account.
No, what's the beauty within that is that you can play tax brackets as much as possible to take advantage of staying within. Let's say you might be in the 15% tax bracket, you might be able to do a $10,000 conversion. Not only will that lower your taxes over the long term, it could also lower those requirement minimum distributions in the future, which would lower your future taxation.
Great. And one other thing I see that some people have in retirement is they have so much income on their tax return, either through, you know, their required minimum distributions, maybe a pension, their Social Security, other investment income. Sometimes they end up bumping up their income so much that they have to pay more for Medicare as well. So it's really important to coordinate all of these different aspects of financial planning. It's so much fun, actually, to coordinate them to kind of get all the advantages that you can get, you know. The other issue we have in retirement, Tim, is healthcare. And sometimes, you know, when we think about investments, we're thinking about returns and things like that. Healthcare, there's sometimes people can make an investment in long-term care policies. Do you see that as being something that folks should, you know, think, just like when you were mentioning when you're young and you kind of have to take an inventory of your liabilities? Now we're older, we haven't taken inventory of our investments, but we also have to look at what other costs we might have coming up, which could be healthcare costs. So
you should definitely be considering that. You really have two ways to consider it. You can self-insure for it, or you could purchase a long-term care policy that will help pay for some of those long-term care costs in the future, which could be very, very costly to you and your family.
Okay. And then also at retirement phase, do people need to revisit their risk tolerance?
Absolutely. You should always be revisiting your risk tolerance. It's important that as you get closer to retirement or you're in retirement now, your time horizon has changed. You may not want that aggressive portfolio anymore because the best laid retirement plans can be derailed by substantial losses in one of the first few years of retirement. So you want to make sure you take that portfolio that was originally designed for growth. You might want to redesign it for growth with income or income distributions that will help sustain your retirement expenses.
You know, you having said, you know, you should kind of revisit your risk tolerance all the time, that's a good point. It just as Judy Harris mentioned last week when we were talking about estate planning, she likes her clients to at least review their documents every 5 years because she said there's changes, and how else does she know to, you know, what she might have to address with those changes? And to your example with Mitch calling earlier with, you know, what are intermediate goals? Same thing applies with risk tolerance, because we have to look to see what other goals you might have and things you have to take care of. Divesting, the last stage. Divesting, folks, we're getting rid of things. From an investment standpoint, what investment decisions might we be making at this stage?
Well, you can start considering gifting monies to your children, your grandchildren. Gift tax rules allow you to give $14,000 to each beneficiary per year. And you might want to look at ways to handle that as through rebalancing. So when you rebalance, you might want to give some of those assets to your heirs or your future heirs now. And that will help also avoid future estate taxes or inheritance taxes as well. So that's always a great consideration.
Okay. And keeping in mind, I guess they have to make sure within their cash flow, if they have enough cash flow then to do some of that divesting, so gifting. When you gift folks, the basis that you have in the asset is retained. I have heard sometimes, Tim, where people think that if they give away some stock worth, you know, $50,000, that the cost basis to their heirs is now $50,000. But if they're giving it away during their lifetime and their basis is 10, that becomes the basis for the gift, and the holding period stays that way too.
Yeah, and you may want to think about that and avoid, quite possibly avoid that situation. Look for assets that do not have as high of gains, because at death your assets receive a step up in basis. So those go on to your heirs then with the step up at the fair market value at your date of death, and are treated as long-term gains, anything above and beyond that then. So that $10,000 cost basis gifted, which is worth 50, is, if they sold, is going to cost them $40,000 of gains, versus with the step up, that would be a cost basis then of $50,000 versus the $10,000.
Right. So then there's no gain on that. So when we're in this stage, the divesting stage, as I call it, which could be, you know, in our final years of life, let's face it, I try to make this a topic that we can talk about, listeners, with our families. If we make it light, it's not so scary. So that would be something, when you hear about parents wanting to gift to their children, then they really need to think about what they're gifting and should they gift that particular asset, because if mom or dad hangs on to it until they die, it gets that step up.
And other things you could think about is your children and your grandchildren may have tuition expenses. They also may have medical expenses. You can actually make those payments for your children or your grandchildren and avoid the gift tax rules completely by making those payments directly to the institutions.
Okay, that's a good point as well. And that would be especially like if grandparent does have cash, they don't need it. Sometimes people, I think, worry about like spending down assets of the parents, thinking that they're going to go into nursing homes. So, you know, you want to avoid trying to impoverish your parents at the same time. Be careful. It's really important to work with an estate planning attorney on those kinds of cases. Don't go willy-nilly and don't impoverish your parents using your power of attorney or anything like that. You want to talk about that with an estate planning attorney. But if you start to have these discussions with your family, it opens the door to do some really smart planning. One thing that I have seen sometimes are young adults who name their parents as beneficiaries on accounts. This also goes to investing, because it's our accounts, our retirement accounts sometimes. Maybe our parents don't need those assets, so you want to also think about who you're naming as beneficiaries on these accounts when we're talking about different investment accounts as well. Tim, anything else you want to add? We have just a couple minutes.
No, I just want to thank you, Lori, for having me this evening, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in.
And do you think it's a good concept to think about all of these elements of the financial planning process as they apply to all these different stages?
Yes, it is. And if you do feel overwhelmed, it's never bad to seek advice, you know, where needed.
And how do people reach you if they'd like to?
You could reach me at my office, 610-868-9000.
Well, thank you, Tim. Thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. Listeners, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. I hope that you have appreciated the series that I'm trying to run on this to try to give you ideas to formulate and maybe get your arms around the importance of financial planning and understanding all of the elements of financial planning and how one aspect affects another. If you think about it and listen back to this show or any of the other shows, first of all, any of this can apply at any stage of your life, but that each of these stages and will have things such as cash flow issues, risk management issues, retirement issues, tax issues, investment issues, and the last one, estate planning. Every aspect of our life can be impacted by these. So we're just have thrown out some of the ideas that we'd like to share with you. It's not everything. It's not a catch-all. And it's not always the answer for everything. But if you start thinking about it, you're going to be on your way to making better decisions. Thank you again. Next week, we're going to talk about what makes a financial advisor and what do all those designations mean. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Judy Ann. Thanks, Jeff. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Tim Roof, thank you very much. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.